Welcome to Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School. So listen, learn, enjoy and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. My guest today is Ben Dawkes, CEO of Ideagen, a global software company that provides compliance and risk management solutions to some of the world's most heavily regulated industries. Now, Ideagen's client list includes 9 of the top 10 global accounting firms, 9 of the top 10 aerospace companies, and 15 of the biggest 20 pharmaceutical companies on the planet. It is a serious player on the international stage. So since stepping into the CEO role in 2018, Ben has led Ideagen through a remarkable transformation. The company's value has grown from around £100 million to more than £1.1 billion. It now employs more than 1,800 people and serves more than 16,000 customers across 150 countries. Perhaps more strikingly, Ideagen has made 29 acquisitions during Ben's tenure, a bold buy and build strategy that's helped fuel its explosive growth. But Ben's career journey didn't start in a boardroom. He left school with a handful of GCSEs and built his first company, Plumtree Group, with his brother from the ground up. At one point, he had to remortgage his house and use credit cards to help make sure his staff were paid. But those early experiences have helped shape his leadership style. A proud Nottingham lad and lifelong Forest fan, Ben knows all about loyalty, passion, and backing your team through thick and thin. He is committed to inspiring future generations under his leadership. Ideagen have teamed up with Forest to launch the Think Big initiative, which is designed to inspire young people to follow careers in tech. Ben once said, "Building this business in my own backyard, where I grew up, being able to support the community in which I grew up, it's the reason I'm so driven to make the business a global success." So Ben Dawkes, the Nottingham Business School, is very proud to welcome you to this episode of the Business Leaders Podcast.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's quite a feel quite humble having listened to that start.
It's all true. So just to start off with, tell us a little bit about Ideagen, how the company exists at the moment and what it does.
So today we are a global leader in the environmental, health, safety, quality, compliance space. We count amongst our customers organisations like British Airways and Emirates and Ryanair, Heathrow, where we manage all of their environmental software. We're the safety management system provider of choice for many of the global aviation customers. We also manage through to large utilities. We're a supplier to the Department of Energy, so we do the health, safety and quality for Los Alamos, large mining organisations, through to over 900 hospitals around the world. So we are the largest player in the world in our space by revenue, which is nearly £300 million today. And we're the largest supplier by customer base as well. So we've really had a fairly transformative few years to be able to get there and super excited about what the future looks like as well.
Wow, right. So let's go back to the start. You launched your first business, management software provider, Plumtree Group, with your brother when you were both relatively young. How did those early experiences, and we've touched upon a couple of them there, shape your approach to leadership and risk taking?
I left school obviously pretty young and had an interesting sales career. Selling pens and pencils and pieces of paper is an interesting place to start on the industrial estates of Leicestershire. I think as you sort of go into setting up your own business, ultimately it's a lot about it. It's about your risk profile, how you think about the challenges ahead, the resilience you have to the normal ups and downs of running a business. Frankly, being a sales professional for sort of 12, 13, 14 years prior to that gives you a lot of resilience. There are a lot of bad days in there. Your risk profile, I think, is just very different. You've had an opportunity to go and speak to hundreds of businesses during that time, and you can understand a little bit about the complexities of what a business needs to look like. But you also understand a little bit what good looks like, and you can overlay that with that risk profile. And I think you just have to be super driven. You know, it's a bit of a competitive will to win. And anybody who knows me knows that, you know, I don't do anything to participate. I only do everything to win.
Right. But sales was a good place to start. Sales is always a good place to start.
For me, sales is a fantastic career. I genuinely believe that's been the foundation of everything that I am today. I still jokingly say at work, I take my sales hat off every morning and put my CEO hat on. There are very few careers in the world where you can go and speak to hundreds of companies who invite you in to do discovery on what's not working for them, and then display critical thinking to come up with solutions that you then have to add value to, and deliver on outcomes to make it work. And, you know, ultimately, I genuinely believe that's a foundational part of business. And, you know, I think sales is a fantastic career foundation for any individual.
Now, you know, it wasn't all plain sailing to start with. You know, as I say, I've read a number of times, so you're obviously quite open with it, that how you're having to remortgage houses to finance your business and relying on credit cards. How did those financial pressures inform your resilience? It sounds like a bit of a trite question, doesn't it, really? Yeah, so, I mean, does this still keep you awake at night, I guess?
I'm probably a little bit more fortunate now than I was. So, no, it doesn't keep me awake today, but it definitely did at the time. And you are making big decisions about what's important for you and what's important for your family. And, you know, I just spoke about risk, and part of that is the risk profile of, you know, is it the right thing to do at this time? Do we? My brother Barney was instrumental in everything we've done. You know, do we believe it's the right thing to do? Are we going to make a success of it? And yes, there's definitely times that you doubt that, but ultimately, it comes down to a belief in yourself. It comes down to a belief in the vision of what you're trying to do and trying to achieve. And it comes down to, you know, can we execute? And, you know, fortunately, you know, we had the right bit of luck at the right time, and it is definitely better to be born lucky than good. I'm not going to...
Oh, yeah, so the power of luck as opposed to planning.
You have to. I've met many brilliant people throughout my career in tech, you know, and things just haven't worked out for them, and they're better than me, they're cleverer than me, they're definitely more intelligent than me. But it hasn't worked out. You do have to be lucky. Things have to happen at the right time. But you have to be then prepared to double down and make sure you go and do something about it when those good things do happen.
Okay, but to a certain extent, you make your own luck.
Yeah, the famous Gary Player, you know, the more I practice, the luckier I get. And there's no doubt at all that you do, you know, there is no shortcut to success. It's a lot of hard work and it's a lot of hours. And those people and those organisations that sort of display those good habits seem to be luckier. There's no doubts at all about that. But also, as we were going through, you know, our business evolution, certain things have happened at the right time in terms of the way the equity markets were very buoyant as we were trying to raise lots of money to fund new acquisitions, for example. You know, if that's the other way around, then that definitely changes our growth profile at the time. There's been certain regulatory laws that have been introduced that have helped fund certain growth profiles within our business at the right time. The reason I say about, you know, that you've got to be lucky, yes, absolutely, because those things have to happen. But then you also have to have the right mindset to go and exploit them and execute on them. And I think that's something we did very well.
Okay. So what do you know now that you wish you'd known then?
Well, lots of things. I think you are always the sum of all of your experiences, and you have to be a lifelong learner. I don't necessarily subscribe to the fact that the future is dictated by the past, though, because, you know, today we are in a super cycle of AI. And, you know, honestly, as a business leader, all I can be today is the best reactor. I'm not clever enough to understand exactly what our business will look like in the next 2 years. So, you know, it's
2 years, that's a very short space of time.
It's a very short space of time, but we're in a super cycle, and we have huge geopolitical, we have huge macroeconomic, we have huge technology changes. And, you know, how do you honestly sit here today and go, God, I'm going to use my past to help think about what my future looks like? Going back to the original question, what do I wish I knew? I wish I knew it was going to be all okay.
It's the obvious answer, isn't it? Yeah, I get it.
I might have a little bit more hair left than what I have today. But the honestly, I think that's the one thing you'd always just tell yourself is, you know, during the bad days, and there are a lot of bad days and there's a lot of challenges, if you knew how it was going to turn out, then yeah, it would be great.
But wait a minute, would you be sufficiently driven though if you thought, oh, this is actually going to work out in the end? Is it not the jeopardy that sort of keeps you going?
I think there's a, you know, I'm very fortunate. So we buy a lot of businesses as an organisation, and you sort of get three types of leaders when you acquire those organisations. You get the leader that almost just goes, thank God. my time is up and I'm out of here like a shot, and I never really liked work anyway, and this, you know, I am done. You sort of get that's quite a large percentage. I'd probably say it's nearly half of the businesses.
And that's because people have worked very hard for 24 hours a day for goodness knows how many years.
Yeah, absolutely. And you it's a relief. You know, you definitely have a set of leaders who, you know, really like the level of control and the lifestyle associated with being their own boss. And therefore, when they get acquired, it's really difficult for them to, you know, become part of a larger organization. There are very few who, you know, have the money in the bank and then go, great. And actually, they see that as freedom, and they're empowered suddenly because they've not got the anchor.
Right, right,
And I genuinely view myself through that. You know, I was acquired in 2012, and, you know, I was able to pay off the remortgage of the mortgage of the mortgage. And I sat in Delilah's in Nottingham, and I watched the money land in the account with my wife. And I was like, oh.
Well, you said, there's an extra coffee there.
Yeah. I said, you can go large coffee this week. And I just felt empowered.
Liberated.
Liberated. I was so motivated. And I think, so you know, I think you are, at your core, you have a really bright fire burning inside of you, or you don't. And, you know, I'm really fortunate. I'm from a family of entrepreneurs. Right. And I just have, that fire has never dimmed. And, you know, frankly, I work longer and harder today, probably than I've ever worked. And that fire still burns really,
you're still
really
loving
bright.
It. Okay, so let's just pick over that one. So IdeaGen bought your company in 2012. You were appointed CEO in 2018. Since then, the business has more than trebled in size. And under your leadership, as you just touched upon there, IdeaGen has bought another 29 companies. So what have you learned about bringing people together, managing integration, culture?
Well, we're nearly 10 times the size now, actually, from when 2018. So that's,
oh, are you really? Goodness gracious. Yeah, that's a failure, failure of my research there. Sorry.
No, not at all. No, we're nearly £300 million, and we were £30 million when I became chief exec. And what have I learned? It's all about people. Yeah, we run a tech business. And in reality, there's only three parts of a tech business. There are your people, your products, and your customers. And they are a virtuous circle, because if you have great products, your customers will love you and your people are engaged. You know, if you have disengaged people, you have disengaged products and your customer service goes down. So these three things are completely interconnected. And when you acquire a business, you are really focused on all three. So that as a technology business, we're a SaaS business. Our model.
So just explain that SaaS. That's in the cloud, is it?
Yeah, it's a software as a service. So if a customer buys software from us, they pay X amount per year to be able to use that software. Predominantly, they pay, you know, a year in advance on multi-year contracts, and that's what gives us the assured revenue to then go and invest that back into product development and make that work.
Stabilizes your business.
It's a very stable business model, and it's very cash generative, which is why we can go and acquire further businesses year on year. So the reality is that when you do that sort of M&A integration, you're heavily focused on that customer base. Are we going to be able to retain that customer base? Are we then going to be able to, using our product development, and we have 650 people in our product and engineering teams, are we going to be able to make that product better? You know, a better user experience, user interface. Are we going to be able to put Maslan, which is our AI agent, over the top of it? And are we going to be able to integrate the people? You know, is it a good cultural fit? How do they fit into our organisational structure? And a lot of that comes down to working really effectively with that organisation during the buying process. We think a lot about the structure of that business. So how do we migrate one structure? Because often they're smaller business than us, and so there's a lot more jack of all trade type jobs to something that is a far more structured org structure within our business. And then how do we communicate effectively during that period when there is undoubtedly a lot of fear, uncertainty, a doubt in their minds about, you know, what does it mean and how's it going to work for them? As a business, we are an organization with no glass ceilings, though. So we have plenty of examples, myself included, where, you know, it doesn't really matter where you've come from, doesn't really matter about your background or your experience, your education. If you display the right talents, the right ability and the right drive, then you can also move really, really fast in our organization. You know, there's plenty of people who have, you know, come through our graduate scheme 7 or 8 years ago that are now VPs running teams of 30, 40, 50 plus people. And that for us is what acquisitions gives us, is that constant drive and challenge and entrepreneurs coming into our business and just making
it
us better.
It's also very exciting.
I think it's great. I still love it.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah, genuinely.
How do you, I mean, I guess success breeds success, and you're buying companies. I mean, what's that, 29 companies under your leadership, and you're constantly reintegrating these people into your system. I guess that is innately exciting in itself, but how do you generate this?
I think be authentic, you know, be transparent, you know. You know, I love the office. You know, we were chatting just before the show, and I love the office. I still, you know, I have a belief that the office is a fantastic place for people to learn. It's a fantastic osmosis of experience that they're able to, you know, create within your organisation.
So you insist people come into the office?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a huge believer, and we have an office culture Tuesday, Wednesdays and Thursdays, and we do loads and loads of different activities within the office to drive that. But how do you then, for, you know, part of that is therefore your cultural identity, it's your values, your visions. And there's no better way of doing that than them seeing me every day. You know, I get up, I go to the gym, I'm 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm in the office for just after 7:30 most days.
So you think it's important for leaders to be visible?
I do, yeah. I know that's not a popular statement to say today in perhaps the way it was, but yeah, I do. I think it's important to be visible. It's important for, you know, them to see that I'm working really, really hard, and that most of my, you know, most of my exec team in the office every day as well, and that they're all working really, really hard, and that we are all absolutely super committed to the values, that, you know, ambition, adventure, community, that we're all aligned into the vision, and that we are super excited and passionate about what we do.
About what you do. Okay, so as you're bringing in people from all these different companies, I've heard you talk about the importance of diversity in building teams. So how do you identify and nurture all these different outlooks within what, as you've carefully laid out there, is a very fast growing tech company?
So for me, we need, you know, as I think about my senior leadership team, so you know, the top 1% of people in our organisation, the sort of 20 people that, you know, run the different functions, then I'm super conscious about the cognitive diversity. I mean, people diversity is a given, but the cognitive diversity about where you've come from. So I want a mix of entrepreneurs. You know, I want sort of 20-25% of the people there to have come through a sort of entrepreneurial background. You know, I remember the days at Plumtree Group. I've been product manager, I have been the sales pre-sales person, the sales person, I was a project manager, I delivered it. I ran the 24/7 support desk for 4 years as well. You know, and there's a you know, it's great to have people who have got that sort of multilingual approach to business, because they've just touched all of it. You wouldn't want a room full of them.
I was just about to say, you need a balance, don't you?
Because that would be chaos. And I love chaos. I literally, you know, happiest place is on the edge of chaos for me. You also need people that have got big company backgrounds where they're putting in strong processes and strong cadence and, you know, the frameworks that make the business a success, those that are super at managing steering groups that ensure that we finish some of the stuff that I like starting. So you have to have this balance. You need people that have you know, worked in different multi-international businesses and multi-jurisdictional, because, you know, I've got no personal experience of, you know, having spent time in America or India or
so what? So what do you do? Do you sit with a long list and say, look, I'm going to have me 25% of this, or is it just something you're conscious of in the background all the time?
I think I'm conscious of it in the background all the time. I sort of formalise it, you know, in the way that for anybody who knows me, is I carry one tiny little book. It takes me about a year to fill in the 60 pages of it, because note-taking is not one of my great strengths. But you'll see scribbles, and those scribbles are, you know, the sort of acknowledgement of where we sit in that process. But you do, you know, that cognitive diversity is what creates challenge, and it's what enables us to constantly improve our business. And ultimately, in our business, we talk about how do we make our boat go faster, and that is all about, and I'll apologise in advance for the slight swear word, but our exco commitment to each other is no surprises, no politics, no bullshit, dare to be different.
Okay.
That is how we think about our executive leadership team, right, and how we think about how do we make our boat go faster, and we have to be in it together. But we've come from it from completely different backgrounds.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. So you're obviously passionate about a number of things, but one of the things you're passionate about is helping future leaders. So what do you do to cultivate leadership potential in other people?
So for me, the future leaders today are, it's a really difficult place to be. You know, the world is changing so much. There's so many jobs going to be on the market that we don't even know what they are yet. You know, and I'll try and give you an example. So today we are literally going through every single job description that we have and understanding the sort of 6 to 8 key component parts and where we think AI plus human, where we think human plus AI, and where we just think human.
This is within the 1,800 people who work for yourself.
This is within the 1,800 people as we think about it. So as we think about future leaders, those future leader skills are changing in front of our eyes. What we see throughout in future leaders within our business is that there are some attributes that without a doubt, you know, you can see rising to the top time and time again. Number one for me is critical thinking. And by that, especially with the use of AI, if you don't have the ability to just understand it and then critically adapt the prompt that you're putting in to keep refining and refining the answer, then actually, in today's world, there is just a new baseline because anybody can put in a prompt, including my 12-year-old who wrote a lovely business plan. You know, and it was great. It was better than any business plan I have ever produced in my life. But when you start then going in the details, what you really need is the ability to go and refine that, make it better, right, to challenge it, and because it doesn't always come out with the right answer the first time. So that ability to critically think and not just take yes for the answer is great. Also, there's a fact that today, those best people quite like a flat structure. You know, the hierarchical structure is dissipating quite quickly and diminishing quickly with the advent of AI.
But you always need somebody in charge.
Well, exactly. And so as we think about those future leaders, then what we're trying to do is really refine and hone those skills to create pods, small, mighty teams. We're putting those people in charge of those small, mighty teams really early, really young, you know, and saying, go and lead this project, go and lead this business. And so an example is, you know, we're a great guy. We bought a business in Australia. We wanted to keep it slightly separate. You know, look, this is a great opportunity. Lift and shift yourself and your family off to Australia, 2 years, go and run that business. You know, and we do that on a really regular basis to create those leaders of the future. Outside of that, I'm also the chairman of the ISP, which is the Institute of Sales Professionals. And, you know, and that's all about trying to give sales a voice into business and into government. And part of that is I genuinely believe that there are lots of opportunity for salespeople to be the future leaders, because going back to the earlier point, sales is a great breeding ground for critical thinking and discovery and challenge. And, you know, I think the two of those are interlined.
Brilliant. Okay, so we're still talking about cultivating leadership, but I'll just take the conversation towards Forrest, because we have to talk about Forrest at some point, because you're a lifelong fan, a season ticket holder. The Idea Gen name is on the shirt sleeve. Kicking off here, as a lifelong fan, what leadership or team values have you drawn from your connection with the club, if any?
Resilience.
Yes. Well, you're not doing badly at the moment, are you?
Not doing badly at all at the moment. No, I'd like to say it was the shirt sleeve sponsorship has been the
three seasons now. Third season.
There's been the critical rise, you know, since we went on the shirt sleeve. It's got better and better. There was no prouder moment. There is a LinkedIn video if you go and search of when the shirt sleeve turned up with the name on the sleeve and in the office, and I did actually cry. I did also utter the immortal words, you know, I've had 2 wives and 3 kids, and this is the best day of my life. But didn't quite cost me.
You can be careful about that, won't you?
didn't quite cost me a divorce, but it was close. But no, it was. Look, it's super proud and. we don't just work with them on the shirt sponsorship. We obviously also have the community programs that we do a lot with them as well.
So this has been a great program, hasn't it? Because this is you putting your money where your mouth is, as it were. Tell us about that, the big idea.
I was an enterprise advisor into Nottingham City Schools. That for me was about trying to ensure that children that found school hard, I'm not going to voice all of my complaints about the education system in Britain here, but I don't necessarily think it's a conducive learning system, for everybody all of the time, and it's not very adaptable. So you do get lots of great kids that drop out the system way too early, and their potential is naturally inhibited by the fact that they didn't finish school in the right way. We love those kids in tech. They think differently, they do differently, they have different vision, and they're probably not they probably don't have some of the sort of burden that you have of having to believe that everything happens in one way. They're naturally more diverse thinkers. So I've got ADHD, as unfortunately do most of the boys in our family as well. And, for me, that's been a super skill. So I really was keen to be involved in the education to make sure that those types of children, weren't limited by the school experience, and that we could really unleash their potential and create unimagined futures. The Think Big initiative was to use the Nottingham Forest Community Trust, which is a fantastic organisation, to go into schools, 14, 15 and 16 year olds, and talk to them about what careers in tech are. Tech is often seen as being, some poor long-haired person sat in a cupboard coding away. That's it. That's what tech is. And it just isn't. There's hundreds and hundreds of amazing jobs that use lots of different skills and experiences and talent. And we just wanted to tell kids at 14, 15 and 16 what these were.
And it's working, isn't it?
We had 15,000 kids last year.
Wow.
Lots of apprenticeships. So we've taken, we take a lot of apprentices each year through the programme, as do other companies in Nottingham, as do Nottingham Forest themselves. And yeah, it's been a great success. We've had 5 years now, 4 years, 5 years of it. And we've committed to another 4 or 5 years for the future as well. So it's a super long-term programme that will impact over 150,000 kids by its finish, which is great.
And another illustration of great leadership.
I don't view myself, to be very open, I don't view myself as a great leader. I'm a driver. I just like to go and get stuff done.
You push.
And I constantly push and challenge. I'm never satisfied. There's something about the leadership paradox, which is a fantastic book of the different paradoxes. So as a buy and build M&A machine, I have to be ruthlessly caring. I care hugely about the people, and the business is like my fourth child. And but I also have to be really ruthless. I have to make lots of really, really tough decisions as a business leader to make sure that we can continue to be fit for growth for the future. That's part of it. I'm relentlessly dissatisfied and I'm relentlessly optimistic. Every single day it's like, how do we make our boat go faster? We've got the best boat in the world. How do we make it go faster? That is the way my brain is wired. And, I don't think that's necessarily, I know others may disagree, I don't think that's necessarily leadership. I'm just a driver and sort of follow me if you can.
Well, you'll call it driving, we'll call it leadership. Okay. But as you know, this is a pod for the Nottingham Business School. So looking back on your career so far, from startup, selling pens, paper, pencils, now to leading a £1 billion+ business. So what would you say that's the single most important leadership lesson that you want to pass on to aspiring leaders and perhaps aspiring entrepreneurs?
I'll do it in two orders.
Okay.
So the from being a leader, my honest view of being a leader is be authentic. It is very, very difficult to be a leader if you're not true to yourself each and every day. You just start to exhibit really bad behaviours very, very quickly. If you're true to yourself and your values, then ultimately people will believe in you and they will follow you. And leadership is, for me, ultimately, it is authenticity is its key attribute. I know there's hundreds and hundreds of books that will give you the longest list of other things that you can do and should be. But for me, if you are yourself and you show up as the best version of you each day at work, then, hey, you are doing 99% of the right thing. The being an entrepreneur, I'm probably going to go against the advice of most people, because my advice of being an entrepreneur is just do it early. Don't wait. Don't sit there and try and do it when you're 35 or 40 and you've got a mortgage and you've got, you know, a partner and two kids and you're going on holiday to Greece every year and you've got two cars on PCP and dirty done, because your risk profile is just very, very different. If I look back, you know, I was 30, my brother would have been 27, 28, and our risk profiles were just really different. I'd probably say my risk profile's always been slightly off kilter anyway, but, you know, it was our risk profiles were really different. And so therefore we were much more willing to back ourselves. We didn't necessarily view bad days in the same way I'd view a bad day today. We were willing to challenge the status quo a little bit more. And in those tough days when, you know, remortgaging the house and paying the salaries on the mortgage and things like this. In those days, you used to have the credit card, the mortgage checks, if you can remember those.
You're showing your age, then.
I've definitely shown my age. And you are willing to do that when you're young, because I think you've just got longer to recover anyway, naturally. You know, but it's pretty hard to remortgage the house if you've been paying it off for 15 years already, and you've got two kids and they're in school, and you've got a whole lifestyle change. Mine were very, very young when I was still doing.
Okay, so if you've got an idea that you want to fly with, do it early.
Do it early. Back yourself. Go for it. And if you get it wrong, in the UK we view that as a bad thing. But genuinely speaking, I view it as a good thing. People who, you learn far more through the failures of life than you ever do through the successes. And it's in those days where you go, actually, look, this is a great idea. And the idea gen of today is not the idea gen of the 2013 vision in any way whatsoever. It is something that we've learned through our failures, and we have grown and developed, and you know, we challenge ourselves every day to make it better.
That's fantastic. Fantastic place to end there. Ben Dawkes, CEO, IdeaGen. It's been an absolute privilege to have you here on the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you very much for the invite.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with the CEO of IdeaGen, Ben Dawkes, why not listen to previous shows with the CEO of transport tech company Microlise, Nadeem Raza, the former Vice President of Toyota Europe, Marvin Cook, OBE, or the former CEO of online fashion retailer ASOS, Nick Beaton. This episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast was produced by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.